Welcome to the Adonis Index Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me is Keith Taylor, and Keith plays fifth in our open contest. If you're listening on iTunes, head over to AdonisIndex.com and check out Keith's picks. Keith, you're pretty ripped. So I guess just give us the history of how you ended up involved in our system, and give us your background in training and dieting, and just basically what you've done as far as that stuff goes until you, and what led you to us.
Okay, let's see. So started my first with weight training is probably 77. That was ninth grade, and I was smaller than everybody. Short wise, because I'm only 5'4" and or 5'6" and above. And, they all went to the weight room every morning, so I just tagged along and started enjoying doing that. We never really had any, there was no structure. You just grabbed the weights and started pushing them around. I kind of gravitated toward, just overhead press, bench, and squats. Did very little back work, very little anything else. That's basically all we did. We never really, we progressed because we all got stronger, but I never really did anything other than those, and I did that through high school. But after high school, I tried a gym setting a couple of times. I didn't like it, so I went out and bought stuff for a home gym. And a squat rack and, all the bench and all that stuff. And so I just did stuff at home and, same kind of basic stuff and, every magazine stuff. And then the only program I ever bought was, what was it called? It was called Super Squats.
By, who was that?
Randall Strawson.
Huh.
I think in 81, I think I bought that book. But it was all based on a 20 rep squat regimen.
Was there other parts to it, or?
Yeah, I wonder where. I got to find that book. It's around here somewhere.
That's interesting. Well, I'm gonna look that one up. I don't think I've heard of that one.
But I did that for a few years, and I got stronger with the squats, and I got stronger with everything else. But still, I never really got, I never really got big. I got stronger, but I never got any size. You could tell I was fit. People always, you could look at me and tell I was fit. And I never was really heavy. 155 pounds when I left high school, and I was like that until about 90, into the late 90s, early 90s.
So was your goal to gain weight at some point? Like every guy who works out?
Well, I never really thought of that because I was on the shorter side. All my friends were all into that, eat big and all that. Where me, I looked at like Franco Colombo because he was probably the shortest of all the pro bodybuilders.
Mm-hmm.
But, I knew I could never attain that size, so I never really tried. I just ate because I liked to eat. I would eat a lot, but I would never really try to pack on weight.
Right.
Away.
So that was never in your thought process. You were thinking build muscle, but you were never really equating it to a body weight?
No, never. I rarely even weighed myself. Even today, I rarely weigh myself. Let's see what else. Another thing too is I have asthma, and back then it was really bad and I couldn't really do any kind of sports. And so that's another thing that I went to, another thing with the weight training was I could do that because it's short bursts of activity where I couldn't do anything endurance-wise. And so the weights, helped with that, with my breathing capacity and that kind of thing.
Does weights improve that over time or no?
To a point.
Yeah.
It seems like it because it makes your lungs stronger because you're pushing and, blowing out and breathing in and that kind of thing. So it seems to help.
Yeah. And it's one of the only things compatible with that for you.
Yeah, because I couldn't do running. I couldn't do any kind of endurance. High rep stuff. I really couldn't do high rep stuff back then.
Oh, yeah. I guess I never even thought of that.
I'd get too winded, and then, I'd start coughing, and then I'd have to put the weights down. So I always kept everything low rep, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 reps. And, you know, I just figured that out myself. And when I got the book and trying to go to 20, it took me a long time to get up to 20 reps, to build up my lung capacity to get up to 20 reps.
Oh, I bet, especially even if you did that on a squat. I mean,
yeah.
Even people who don't have asthma, that would be hard.
Yeah. What else? You know, diet-wise, you know, I never really, you know, I just ate. You know, I would eat, you know, half to a full pizza at a time. I would eat 2 or 3 burgers at a time. You know, I would just eat and eat and eat. But I never really got big. You know, I stayed, like I said, I stayed 155 all the way up until the late 91. Because in 91, that's when everything, my whole life changed in 91, because I worked in a warehouse, warehouse. And so I was loading a truck that morning, and I was picking up a pallet of onions fell over, and I was picking up a bag of onions, which were 80 pound sacks of onions. Mm-hmm. And it was probably about 5:30 in the morning. And first thing, and when I picked it up, I grabbed it, and I was kind of sling it over my shoulder back up under the pallet, and I felt this puff behind my right shoulder blade, and that was the last day I ever worked there. So I went to doctors, and they couldn't really figure it out, and finally I got in with this one sports doc after 2 years of the workers' comp doctors trying to figure out what's wrong with me, and they figured out it was I pulled a nerve, the long thoracic nerve, which it connects to the serratus anterior and some other scapular type muscles. And so that put an end to my weight training, because I couldn't do anything. I couldn't do anything overhead. I couldn't do anything where my arm would outstretch from my body, because the scapula would wing out from my back and cause pain. So the doctors told me it would take 10 to 20 years for the nerve to regenerate, but in that time, the muscles that the nerve supplies with, I did, you know, little stuff. I was able to do push-ups.
Sorry, can you you repeat that? We lost the connection. Were the muscles just atrophy at that point?
Yeah, the muscles atrophy, you know, because of the lack of nerve sensation.
Sure, yeah.
So that's what happened. My whole right side, you know, you could see it in my chest, my back. It caused a slight scoliosis because my left side was stronger than the right.
Yeah.
My right delt was smaller. My bicep was smaller. My forearm was still similar size because I could still use that. But anything else I had to lift, because I couldn't lift, I couldn't do anything for years with any kind of weight. And then, about 2001, about 10 years, I started experimenting with the weights again, small amounts, just seeing if I could do anything, and it would cause headaches and pain in my back, so it would stop. And so every year or so after that, I would try. And this is when my weight started catching up with me, you know, in the mid-90s, all that eating was starting to catch up with me. So I started slowly creeping up. And let's see, what about 2009, I could actually handle, you know, about 15 pounds with my right arm, which was, you know, pretty good at the time. So I started playing around with kettlebells and doing some high intensity type stuff, but it was just too much work and I didn't really like it. And, you know, my weight still get up, and I was up by 2010, I was 170 pounds, and being with my work, I work in the medical field, and I'm on the floor. I do a lot of physical work, so I'm on the floor. I get up, I get down, I crawl around, and do all this type of stuff. And that weight was just getting in the way. My asthma was kind of out of control, where I was wheezing all the time and coughing, and I was just getting fed up with it.
And is this your heaviest body weight of your life that you can remember?
Yeah, that was my heaviest ever. It was 170.
Okay, so at this point, you could say your health was just not good.
Yeah, I was, you know, my just my breathing was terrible, my weight and all that. And, you know, you look in the mirror and it just didn't look that great. And so I started got on the internet and just looking for something I could do with my asthma to alleviate some of the breathing problems. So my search led me to find out that asthma was an autoimmune disorder. So I started looking for autoimmune things, and that's when I came across Eat Stop Eat, because something about the fasting would help with autoimmune issues. So I started reading through that, and I bought that in December of 2010. Mm. And, you know, I read through it, and I said, it's worth a try. And that's me anyway. I don't really think about things. I look at it, I'll try it and see how it works. I'm in more of an experimenter type of person, so I just try it and see what happens. I gave it 30 days. And to my amazement, my asthma got better. I couldn't believe how much better I could breathe within 30 days of doing the intermittent fasting. It was, and so I went back to the bedside and I read through it again, and that's where I saw the Adonis program there. And, I went over to the forums and I joined and I looked around and I read through and I said, I still can't really lift weights. And so I kept doing the Eat Stop Eat and started playing with the weights more because I was getting more interested in that. And my kettlebells were slowly going up, but I just couldn't get into that, CrossFit and all that type of high intensity stuff. I just wasn't my style. So I figured, and then I think I finally bought into the program. I think it was March or something like that of this year. So I bought the program and I read through it. Just, I'm not a big reader, so I just kind of glanced over the whole thing. And I figured I got to start somewhere. So I just picked out the shoulder booster because I figured I got to build up some strength on my right side. Mm-hmm. So I started with the shoulder booster and I just played around with that. And I started out with like 15 pounds doing overhead press and with dumbbells. And I train at home. I don't have any of the equipment anymore, but I kept about 300 pounds of weights. Mm. And all I have is dumbbells. And so I started playing around with the dumbbells and pushing and pulling and push-ups and overhead presses and doing that and doing the shoulder boosters. And I did that for a month, and my strength slowly went up. And I thought, maybe I'll try doing the – I gave it a couple of months, and then I started on the MBF, the muscle, the foundation. Was in June. I finally said, I'll start the program. So I started that, and I started out that. My shoulder could handle it, my back could handle it, and I just kind of progressed through that, and it went well. I was amazed at how much weight I could handle, because all the doctors said I wouldn't be able to do this again. But, as you can see from the pictures, it's still, if you look close, you can see the imbalances, like especially in the back pose, and you can see the imbalances still a little bit on the right side.
I think you see it more than anyone else would.
It
looks pretty balanced to me. So now when you say, okay, so that's good. So would you say, like, how, percentage-wise on the mend are you, or do you feel like, how much more do you, did it hurt? Like, does the shoulder in that whole area hurt, or is it just dead, there's just not a lot of strength?
How do you explain this? Because what it feels like is, and this is hard for anybody to kind of picture, because your shoulder blade normally stays flat against your back.
Oh, yeah.
So, but even today, when I lift my arm up or out, the shoulder blade wings away.
Mm-hmm.
So now the surrounding muscles, like the rhomboids and all those surrounding muscles in that area, are strong enough to kind of hold it in place. But early on, when I would push or overhead, you could actually feel the scapula push out away, and that would strain all the muscles. And it would actually hurt, and it would give me these terrible, terrible muscular headaches doing any kind of repetitive motions.
And is that dissipated now? Like, okay, so I guess back to my original question, are you, percentage-wise, how far back are you on that side?
As far as strength?
Yeah, like strength, health, like mobility, you know.
Like, well, mobility's, you know, it's pretty much the same as the left now. Because
okay.
I can do, you know, like this morning I did, I finished my training before the call, so overhead, and I was doing, you know, 40 pounds both sides, dumbbell, 40-pound dumbbells, which is, you know, in 6 months, that's a big feat for me.
Oh, yeah, considering you hadn't touched a weight and you had, and all
yeah.
the things you've gone through. So is it healing faster than they suggested, or is it about on pace with what they said?
No, it's been about almost 20 years.
Man, that's nuts.
I heard it in 91.
This is 20 years, yeah. Did you even believe it could take, did you even believe such a diagnosis would even, or do you think they were just making stuff up at that point? Like 20 years is so far away.
Well, yeah, I kind of figured they had an idea, but I didn't think it would take 20 years. You know, because every year I would try it. And this was the first year I could actually do an amount of training without it bothering me. In 3.0, the strength endurance bothered me.
Some of that volume in that short rest period. Yeah, it doesn't sound like you'd be. It would work with the condition with that thing you have right now.
Yeah, so I altered the program a little bit there. So I was doing strength endurance 2 days a week, and then the hypertrophy 2 days a week.
Okay, yeah, just to cut down on some of that volume.
Yeah, so then I could handle it that way.
And how's the asthma right now? Do you still eat, stop eat? Okay, so that's your training, and you went MBF all the way through this contest, or what did you do?
Well, I did MBF until, I think about 3 or 4 weeks into the contest. I went over, I did rage, the timed rage for 2 weeks, and then into 3.0.
Okay.
After that.
And then
I did that right up until the end.
Sure. And so you've adjusted to the volume in general? I know you made some minor adjustments, but in general, you could handle this?
Oh, yeah. You know, and I really like the volume of MBF. I think it was more the rep range of the and the endurance that got me more than the volume.
Right.
Now doing ATS, I'm missing the volume of MBF. It's the strangest thing. I'm wanting more work, and this is actually... It feels like wet less, you know. I'm more like right now. My shoulders are aching after today, but it's still less volume than MBF.
It's interesting. A lot of people who do MBF just feel like everything else is just like not enough. But it's funny. It's you got to wrap your head around that. Doesn't always have to be that much volume because you come back to it, right? Like, if you make your way to compound cluster cycles, that's a lot of volume. And then when you get back, and then if you go back into 3.0 or IXP or ATS in between, then come back to MBF again. Then there's kind of like the idea is you flow in and out of high volume states and you know somewhat lower volume states. But I guess when I think about it, and I guess I don't explain it well enough, it's you adjust your intensity to whatever volume you're handling. So you're trying to push as hard as you can, given the volume. And so when 3.0 or ATS feels like less volume, the idea is you better push even harder because you know there's less volume, right? IXP changes from week to week. It goes like 3 days, 4 days, 5 days, so the volume keeps changing too.
Yeah.
It does in ATS too. At the end, it goes to five days a week.
Yeah, I was just glancing over week four. It looks like it's going to change again.
so it's different. Yeah, I do that on purpose. But but I know what you're saying. What you've just said is what a lot of people report in that MBF is, and it's true. It's a lot of volume on that one.
Yeah.
So okay, so tell me about your dieting then, and you got really lean here, and talk us through because your final stats you're somewhere in the 130s it looks like, and
138 was my end.
Yeah, and. And you're nice and lean at that size, but you were at 170 something. So how did you eat, stop and eat your weight all the way through, or how'd you do this?
So part of my research, you know, when I started Eat, Stop, Eat, that was that. And then part of my research in the asthma was gluten would also cause asthma to worsen. So that was another thing I tried. I tried, you know, dropping the gluten for 30 days to see
how that goes.
And same thing, my asthma got better, and I dropped a lot of weight. That was another thing. I couldn't believe I could drop. I dropped almost 20 pounds in 30 days just by dropping the gluten.
Wow. And now, was that a trick on figuring out, because gluten's in just about everything, so
yeah.
Then did you have to become a creative shopper and cooker, or was it not that big a deal?
Luckily, I like to cook, and so it was not a big deal. Basically, that was cutting out all the processed foods.
Basically refined stuff for sure and processed stuff.
Yeah, so, and then I really wasn't sure that was the thing, so after 30 days, I brought the gluten back for another 30.
Uh-huh.
And my asthma got worse, I put on more weight, and at the end of the 30 days, I dropped the gluten again, just to see, and my asthma got better, I dropped weight, and, you know, so I figured, well, it must, the thing, I stayed away from it. And then I would try eating gluten a few times a week and see how that would affect me. And I could do gluten a couple of days without any problems. But, you know, 3 or 4 days, then my asthma would kick up and it would get worse again.
So you can't habituate on gluten. You have to treat it like a treat, like once or twice a week.
Yeah, basically like a treat, yeah. Once a week, once a month, you know. And, you know, when I do eat it, I eat it. I don't just have a couple of
bites. And that's fair. Yeah. So you're not a celiac, and you're not necessarily intolerant as much as you are highly sensitive. And that's what we're finding in the research is gluten. There's a spectrum. There's a big chunk of the population that just doesn't bother them at all. And then there's people who are celiac, and they can't touch it. And then there's people like you who it a little bit's okay, but a little bit more, and all of a sudden you have asthma. So percentage-wise, where's your asthma from before to now? Like, how bad?
I would say, because of my medication, I've dropped the medication down to nothing.
Our connection just went weird then. Can you repeat what happened with your medication?
Medication, I've dropped almost nothing. You know,
great.
Before, like when I first started back in November of last year, you know, I was doing my rescue inhalers once a day. I was doing all these other inhalers. I was taking pills. Nasal sprays, nasal pills, and now, you know, only time is seasonal. You know, and if I feel something coming on, I start taking it. But other than that, I haven't taken any of my medication in 3 weeks now.
That's great. And based on how you've discovered this between fasting and gluten, what's your opinion now on the type of, I don't want to get into this conspiracy stuff, but you know where I'm going with this, like the fact
that you found
this on your own, and you figured out that something as simple as fasting and just reducing gluten could greatly affect this problem, this autoimmune problem you've had, and that no medical professional could have told you this over the years.
Because I've brought it up to my doctors, you know, because I've after I made the change, I think I had an appointment with the doctor about maybe 60 days or so after doing the Eat Stop Eat and the gluten, and I had the best lung capacity test ever. You know, I've never had a 90% in my lung function, and she asked what I was doing because she noticed my weight was down and that was up, and I told her, and she said that can't be.
That's a terrible answer. It can't be. She's looking right at you. Oh my God, this stuff makes me furious when I hear this.
Yeah.
Hear people getting this type of reaction.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it wasn't in one of their textbooks. They just don't believe it.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, well, good for you for figuring it out, and that now that you're, you know, better that you figured it out.
Yeah. Because I can do a lot. You know, even now I still jogging around, that kind of thing. I still can't go very far because my lung capacity I don't have that, but I don't start coughing and wheezing like I used to. And I probably, if I trained at running, I could probably do that, but that's just not my cup of tea doing that type of activities.
Sure. But the point is now your body's in a condition where you likely could add that if you chose to.
Oh,
plus,
yeah.
You're just, it's better. Like the whole point is better.
Yep.
Okay, good. So throughout the contest, you got pretty lean, but you didn't have to change much during our contest. I want more of the story of when you went from 170 to where you got to at the end here?
Let's see. Well, basically, I just started eating less. You know, I did the fasting, you know, a couple, maybe twice a week. And then, like, the, So in November 2010, when I started the Eat Stop Eat, I dropped the 15 pounds, and then I just slowly started coming down. And I didn't really change my diet all that much except the gluten. And
right.
Then June, when I started doing MBF, I pretty much ate the same, but my weight still was coming down. And then I came down to about 140, 145 is where I was hovering around and mm-hmm. not doing anything special. But then when I hemmed and hawed about joining, you know, getting in the contest. And finally when I decided, okay, so then that's when I really started paying attention to what I was actually putting in. And I started, you know, weighing everything and all that so I could actually get an idea of what I was actually putting in. And so that's when I started really cutting back on the fats and that kind of thing just to keep the calories in check. I'm not a big protein eater, you know. Maybe 50, 60, 70 grams a day, sometimes less, sometimes more, but so most of the time hovering in that range.
Mm-hmm.
I eat a lot of vegetables in general and that kind of thing, and I would got creative because I like a big meal. And usually low-calorie meals are pretty small. So I was experimenting with creating a large volume of meals. So I would eat once a day there, beginning of the contest. Because I was trying to drop weight quickly at first and taper back up. Because what I looking at a lot of the other contestants and that kind of thing through the past years, I didn't want to look that flat type of look. And so I wanted to actually eat more toward the end of the contest. So
That's interesting you say that, because me and Pilon are working on an actual Adonis Index contest diet. We're going to have it ready for the next contest. But and that's the theory, or that's what we're seeing, is the way to do it is to cut at the beginning and eat your way up to maintenance at the end. So you're eating you're eating the most amount of food at the end of your diet and the least amount at the beginning.
Yeah.
So you basically stumbled across the theory that that's what we're working on.
Yeah, because I did a couple experiments, you know, early on just to see how I would look. You know, because I never, just off the computer or online estimates, I was in the 13 to 14 range body fat percentage. But still I could see the fullness difference depending on what I ate. So I did an experiment about 6 weeks into the contest. And that's what gave me that idea. I'll start tapering up the calories toward the end.
Yep.
And so that's basically what I did. And I was shocked to see that I placed, because I figured, I only lost 6 pounds. I've still, got all this body fat still. And
But you're good. You're pretty lean. I mean, and the open part isn't necessarily about having a huge transformation. It's just about getting lean and in shape. So no, I think you did well. I think your pictures are good. Okay. So then what's your advice? What kind of aha moments or any take home advice that, you'd have for anyone, I don't know, for people with asthma, like you tell me, like, what, is there something you kind of want to get across to people, like some useful advice?
Useful advice. I don't know. See, my thing is because it seems like just reading the forums, that kind of thing, a lot of guys try to overanalyze everything. And for me, I'm not that way. I barely even read the manual. When I bought the program, I didn't even look at the manual. I just went straight to the workouts, kind of glanced over it and started it. You know, picked out a section and just started there. But, I'm not that, even anything. I just don't read the instructions. I just jump in.
You learn from experience. It's actions
more important
than knowledge.
That's my thing. I try to figure out what will work and what won't, and just go from there. So my thing would be just not to overanalyze, you know, whether it's the program, the manual, or, you know, a lot of guys are going on the ratios and all that. And the weight is the one that bothers me the most. I always see everybody talking about body weight and body weight, where, you know, who cares what you weigh? It's what you look like. And, you know, cause it, you know, even when I was going to the contest, I didn't really, you know, I did the weigh at the beginning and the measurements at the beginning, but even through, I rarely took my weight or measurements through the contest. I just looked in the mirror and, you know, gauged everything from that.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good message, and that's kind of what I'm hearing from you, from everything you've done. And this is an important message. It's the experience of the authority of experience. Like, you did the gluten test, you found out that, hey, you know, my asthma goes away. Then you put it back just to be sure. And you're like, yep, it's the gluten's contributing to it. You did eat, stop, eat. You're like, oh, that helped too. And then, like you said, you just jumped right into the workout and went. So it's, you're right. A lot of people can get caught up in analysis paralysis. They read it and they're like, well, I don't know if that workout's really for me. And it doesn't that sound like too? People do that all the time. I get emails about, like, well, what do you think? I'm like, I don't know. Do it. Like, it worked for all these other people. What do you want me to say? Like, they want like a guarantee or something. And I'm like, I don't know. It's your body. I don't know what's going to happen to your body until you do it. My guess is it'll be fine, but you know, you got to try it. I guess that's the answer. You got to try.
Yep. Just jump in.
All right, so I think that's a good place to leave it off. So for Keith Taylor, I'm John Barbin, and that's your Adonis Index podcast.